Hey, welcome in. Latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. Go by SEC Mike on the Twitters. And there's our great friend, Stephen Lassen, the senior editor over at Athlon Sports. And Stephen, can you confirm? I heard a wild rumor about you. You partied pretty hard last night as the Steelers beat the Ravens. Can you confirm?
Mike, that might be as most excited as I've ever been in a long time because my spirits are pretty down after that certain completion there on fourth down. And then once I saw the kick trending off to the side, I think I yelled, he missed it. And so I didn't want to wake the two-year-old up in the house. So we are very excited in the Lassen household about some playoff football in the Steel City coming up.
Awesome. Well, I figured that'd be the perfect way to get you going here because we're jumping into the portal for some portal madness as college football has been overtaken once again by this mythical portal. What, over 4,000 players in the transfer portal? So I've asked Stephen to come prepared. We're going to talk about the top 10 players' commitments out of the portal thus far in the SEC, top 10 players or losses, I guess you'd say, via the portal, and who knows, Stephen, a player could be on the biggest loss and the biggest commitment as well. So we're going to deep dive into all that, but I wanted to start with the games that we actually had last weekend. Before we get to that, though, of course, always got to remind the cousins, we're brought to you by MyBookie, the online sportsbook. Go check them out. Still time to get in on the action. I know college football is about wrapped up, but still a couple games, great games left on the docket. We got NFL playoffs this weekend, so a lot of time to get in on the action. And shout out our great friends over at Tennessee Legend. Steven downed a whole bottle of this Tennessee Legend when that kick went wide. So go check out our friends, Tennessee Legend, official spirit of that SEC podcast. Which game would you like to be happy or would you like to be sad, Steven? Would you like to start with the Rose Bowl or the Sugar Bowl?
Mike, let's get the bad news out of the way, first of all. And hey, Mike, by the way, you know, all this transfer portal stuff, I am just excited to just announce that I am committed to talking SEC ball with the hardest working man in the SEC, SEC Mike and all the cousins. So happy new year, by the way.
Absolutely. Happy new year. But it's not a happy new year for the Crimson Dad, Steven. They got their butts pounded 38-3. By some team called Indiana. I never heard of them, but man, they looked legit in the Rose Bowl. What, thoughts on that one, Steven?
Mike, I'm not surprised that Indiana won this game. I'm surprised at 38-3, though. That was the thing that surprised me the most. And watching the first, you know, couple series, there was the first Indiana offensive possession, and Alabama picked up those sacks, and I thought, oh, here we are. We talked about leading up to the game that Indiana offensive line had maybe been a little bit suspect when it comes to good pass rushes. And Alabama was getting after Fernando Mendoza. Thought maybe, okay, Alabama can do this. This is how they're going to stay in the game. And then from then on, it was all Indiana. And I think we go back to the kind of what we saw at the end of the regular season for this Alabama team. Just not enough balance. And they've got to be able to at least run the ball a little bit to have some, take the pressure off of Ty Simpson or whoever is a quarterback. And then the line of scrimmage has got to get better for this team. A line of scrimmage that is losing quite a bit of pieces as we go into 2026. So, you know, not, like I said, not surprising that Alabama lost this game. I think the thorough beatdown that Indiana delivered Alabama was probably the most surprising thing to me.
Yeah. I mean, what was the spread? What, 7 points, something like that? So
right.
Multiply that by several to get where we ended up. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was a pitiful performance and one that I think it kind of sums up college football right now, though, doesn't it, Stephen? Where the old guard, the old dynasty, getting completely dismantled by an upstart that I think the casual fans probably didn't know. Probably anybody on Indiana's roster yet. They look like the dominant force in that ball game. But where does this leave Alabama under Kalen DeBoer? Steven, do you think the arrow's pointed up on DeBoer's program, or Do you think he's been exposed a little bit as, obviously he's not Nick Saban, no one is, but do you think he is cut out for life in the SEC? Maybe that's a better way to say it.
Mike, I think kind of to unpack the first thing for a second, which is like Indiana's rise. And I think it shows, and we look at the final four teams this year, you know, teams have gone heavily into the portal like Ole Miss. Indiana has done that to some extent. You know, in this era of college football, it's really hard to stockpile a bunch of talent on one roster. It's hard to keep everybody happy. It's hard to keep everybody paid. So talent has been dispersed quite a bit, but also it takes like right coach, right portal, collection, and then, you know, you can hit. And we see that with Indiana right now. So I think what maybe Indiana's success has done is, first of all, it's probably going to raise the bar for all the new coaches, because they're going to say, hey, if Kirk Cignetti can do it, you better be able to do it. So all the new coaches now have this new standard that Cignetti is setting. But also, I do think it opens the door for any of these teams that say, hey, if we're willing to invest, we get the right coaches, we get the right portal class, we can go to the playoff the next year. And like I said, if Texas Tech and Indiana can do this, all these teams that are in the SEC, if they're willing to invest and they develop and recruit right, they can do it as well. I think on Kalen DeBoer, I think if you wanted to kind of like almost like pinpoint where the arrow is, it's almost like just kind of flat at this point. Is that, I don't know, maybe it's kind of the wrong way to look at this, but it almost feels like a week ago when they beat Oklahoma, it's kind of like, oh, like DeBoer's got this, the big game DeBoer, it's back. Yeah, they went on the road and rallied, and then a week later they get pummeled by Indiana. I do think we're going to find out if he's cut out for the SEC going forward. Because if you look at this team and look what they've lost, you know, Parker Brailsford to the NFL, Ty Simpson's got a big decision, Jeremy Bernard's off to the NFL. We're going to find out, because they've been recruiting pretty well, but now you have to restock the line of scrimmage. If Keelan Russell's your quarterback, we're going to find out just how good Ryan Grubb and Kalen DeBoer can develop a quarterback in the SEC. And of course, among the backdrop, the 9-game SEC slate next year. So it's not going to get any easier. I do think, in kind of a sense, there's a standard question, I think, at Alabama, because much like Kirk Cignetti has raised the bar for all these new coaches, matching Nick Saban's standard at Alabama is just impossible for any coach. Like you said before, Mike, I think it's a new era of college football where all these teams at the top are kind of clustered really close together. And then you're seeing like a separation, like you top 20 or so. And then after that, it kind of drops off and those teams are all clustered together. Alabama's in that like first tier of college football. Are they going to be more up and down? The variance, probably quite a bit. I think that there's a good chance that happens. It's just the question is, if you think you should win the national title every year, Kalen DeBoer is probably not going to be your guy. If you want to go to multiple playoffs and you want to compete for SEC championships, I still think he's your guy, but I think we're going to know more after next season, after they get a chance to reload this roster. Do you think that's fair?
Perhaps, but let me ask you, because you hit on something important that I wanted to piggyback off. Ty Simpson and his decision upcoming, you know, go to the NFL. If he goes to the NFL, this question will be kind of null and void, because I think it'll just be, well, DeBoer got this guy that I think even Alabama fans were like, it's Ty Simpson. We want Russell. You know, that was their discussions in the offseason. But let's say Ty Simpson returns to college football, Stephen, but does not return for Alabama. There's rumors that Tennessee is interested. Apparently, Josh Heupel just met with, I think it's called Martin, Tennessee. He went to the high school where Ty Simpson's father is a head coach, and his other son is a quarterback. So coincidence? Maybe. I don't know. But there's also speculation that LSU, very interested in adding Ty Simpson should he jump into the portal. So if that were to happen, and it really doesn't even matter if it's LSU, Tennessee, or Indiana. You know, it literally doesn't matter. But if he were to come back to college football but decide not to play for Kalen DeBoer, is that an indictment on the DeBoer program at all? Or do you think it's maybe they just are eager to clear the way for Russell? Because going into a pivotal year three, I mean, Russell could be the next great quarterback, or he could be a complete bust. I mean, we literally have no evidence one way or another. So I would imagine if you're going into a make or break year, which it may not be a make or break for Kalen DeBoer, but it's getting close. If we're going into that with a totally unknown at quarterback, that seems like a huge gamble. I think I'd much rather have Ty Simpson. So if he comes back and he's not at Bama, is that an indictment, do you think?
I don't think so. And I think here's why. I think there is a chance that Keelan Russell could be better. I think that just because of the maybe the long-term upside and because of recruiting potential, obviously. That's a think. I think what we know is Ty Simpson is better right now. I think if you try to keep both quarterbacks there, it's probably going to be tough. We've seen that just, you know, there's still, 11 days left in the portal window. It does feel like there's a lot of dominoes still to come. You know, you mentioned LSU, you know, Brendan Sorsby committed to Texas Tech. I'm sure it was the facilities that got him. Wasn't that $5 million check? So I guess what I'm getting at is it wouldn't surprise me to see another run on quarterbacks go to the portal. Because somebody out there is going to miss. And whether it's LSU, whether it's Miami, someone like that. At some point, I think if you think about like optimism and you think about hope, those two things sell. And I think you know what you have in Ty Simpson, obviously, but that potential, that hope of Keelan Russell, he's the five-star, he's maybe the next star. You know, we think he could be better. We don't know that. But if you're Kalen DeBoer and you want to buy yourself maybe a little bit of time to restock the team, you go to turn it over to Russell, you reload to the portal, you start thinking, okay, we can be pretty good next year, but we're going to be really good in 2027. So that's kind of like, I could see how some of these scenarios start to play out. I think if you for sure want to win next year, Ty Simpson's got to be your guy, right? Because you know what you have in him. You don't know what you have in Keelan Russell. He could be better. So I guess to answer your question, Mike, I don't think it's necessarily an indictment on DeBoer if Simpson leaves. I think what would probably not look good for Kalen DeBoer is if they say, we're going to go to Russell. He ends up not being very good. And Simpson goes like to Miami and wins the Heisman Trophy or Tennessee. That would not be very good for him.
You sound like Kalen DeBoer's agent, Stephen. In year four will be decent. But if that's a game plan, I think that guy's cooked already. Hey, shout out Michael Dunlap, big Gamecock fan. I appreciate the donation. So he's got a question here. Hey, Carolina, having offensive linemen getting picked by other big schools, is that a bad sign that maybe Carolina can't develop them? They haven't been able to stop anyone. What, any thoughts on that, Stephen?
Michael, I think that's a good question. I think maybe the way to look at offensive linemen is there's always going to be somebody that sees a skill set in an offensive lineman and says, I can develop that. And big athletic offensive linemen that can move, especially in the SEC, are always in short supply. And if you're not necessarily looking for starters, you're probably looking for depth too. We just saw one commit to Texas A&M. I think there has been a talent development problem at South Carolina from the offensive side of the ball, coordinator, you know, assistant coaches, all that down. So I do think it kind of raises your eyebrow that maybe some of these other guys are going to SEC schools or they're value. I will also say, just keep in mind the supply and demand too, because there are a lot of offensive line. There's not quarterbacks are probably the one position right now. There's maybe the fewest entries outside of specialists, receivers, defensive backs. There's quite a few offensive linemen. You're always looking for them and they're in short supply and everybody needs them, whether that's depth or starter. So I think if you see a skill set you like, and your assistant, you're probably going to take a gamble on that guy. So I think both those things could be true. It could be development, and it also could be, hey, these teams got to fill out the depth chart next year, and they see guys with SEC experience, so they're going to bring them in.
Hey, shout out Mike. Hey, he says, hey, Steven, we heard the same thing about old five-star Jackson Arnold. Go with the proven option, going back to Ty Simpson, Keelan Russell. But again, what one situation does not necessarily reflect the other, but I don't know, Stephen. I mean, let's look at, and again, this isn't fair either necessarily, but look at the teams in the playoff, right? I mean, we got Oregon, transfer quarterback, Indiana, transfer Heisman, Trinidad at Ole Miss, and Carson Beck, Miami. So I don't know, Stephen. the day of the high school quarterback may be done. You know, I mean, as crazy as that is to say, and it's not done, but I mean, proven experience, I think is incredibly valuable.
I think so too. I think for on the transfer situation, I you know, I've mentioned this, Mike. I do think about probably 50-60% of college football is going to start a transfer next year at quarterback. That's been kind of the trend the last couple of years. And I think those playoff teams, you know, kind of signify like the having a transfer at quarterback is not a bad mark on your program. I think the debate as we're talking about this, and I think it's a fascinating one. If you're Kalen DeBoer sitting in your office and you're saying, we've got Keelan Russell, but, and I know, like he said, the willing to develop and all that and stick around to the program. But if you could lose him, like, are you banking on his upside eventually paying off? Or do you think running it back with Ty Simpson next year and knowing that, hey, he might be close to his ceiling ish, whereas Russell's upside is really high. So how do you weigh those two things in an era where you can't keep two quarterbacks, even if they all say the right things? It's a really fascinating debate if you're Alabama on what to do. And so I think going with the sure thing is definitely the safest option. The gutsy kind of bold decision would be to go with Russell, or I guess Austin Mack looked pretty good in the Rose Bowl in that limited time. I think Russell's obviously the guy long-term, but that's an interesting debate. If you're Alabama, don't you think?
Oh yeah. Well, you know, what is also interesting, Stephen, shout out Tolkien. Appreciate you. Multiple donations here. Can you smell what the Portal King is cooking, Stephen? They ain't leaving. What a day. And no, I didn't see your Twitter post, but we do appreciate you, Tolkien. Just going to keep posting till we get to Ole Miss. So I appreciate you, Tolkien. And that's a great segue to talk about the Sugar Bowl. But perhaps before we get there, Stephen, man, it's been a historic day thus far for the Rebels. Trinidad staying home. Of course, he's still got to get his waiver to get it approved, but there's optimism that that happens. They've re-signed. They just announced a couple. I was just looking at it, Stephen. I think it was the kicker and the punter, which, I mean, hell, the punter was, or the kicker was damn MVP of the Sugar Bowl, you could argue. There's rumblings that Kewan Lacy is staying at Ole Miss. I mean, again, it's just keeping all these guys potentially away from LSU. Everyone is a win. It really is a worst case scenario for Lane Kiffin, I would think, that Ole Miss keeps winning, keeping these, you know, like if Ole Miss had lost to Georgia, which it nearly, you know, it came down to the wire. I think a lot of these guys are LSU Tigers. But because we're going a week further into the portal and these guys are getting caught up and being momentum and Ole Miss is finding money. I think it's a worst case for old Portal King, don't you?
I do. I was going to say the real Portal King, what Pete Golding, right? After he's done. Pete Golding's pushed all the right buttons so far, hasn't he? I mean, on the field, off the field, he's really doing, he's doing better than I think anyone probably would have anticipated at this point. I think LSU's situation is fascinating because it also ties into the Ty Simpson discussion that we're having. If you check off Sorsby, you check off Chambliss, DJ Lagway was on Florida State's campus, and now it looks like he's maybe visiting Virginia. The next best option is Sam Leavitt at Arizona State. And I think he'd be a good fit for LSU. But also I think you're talking about, is that the last portal quarterback that we're going to see? Or are we going to see a surprise or two, maybe like a Simpson or someone else? With the amount of cash that LSU can throw around, you know they're going to be big game hunting at quarterback. So, if you're Ole Miss, I think number one, the wins that you've stacked up probably help to keep Chambliss and Lacy there. And number two, I think I'm sure everybody at Oxford is just absolutely thrilled at the thought of Lane Kiffin just being so ticked off that, you know, maybe you planned out to get Lacy. You thought Chambliss was going to get that extra year. And now these guys are staying in Oxford, making Lane Kiffin scramble for what plan B, C, and D. I'm sure those Ole Miss fans are not upset about that at all.
Well, what I know they're not upset about, Steven, is the Rebels marching on in the Sugar Bowl. Arguably the game of the year in college football up to this point. Man, back and forth, back and forth, and Trinidad was a hero. Some of the decisions by Kirby and company, very questionable. We already shouted out Lucas Canero, 3 of 3 on field goals, 55, 56, and then the 47 game winner. Kewin Lacy had 98 yards, 2 touchdowns. I mean, it was just an epic performance, and they really kind of had their way with the Georgia defense that had seemingly turned the corner. What was your thoughts, Stephen, on Ole Miss beating Georgia in the Sugar Bowl?
Mike, first of all, the first game was awesome. I didn't expect that we'd get a second thriller like that. I thought for sure it'd be played kind of at a different pace. But, man, two heavyweight fights between these teams. I wish we could get a third because the two matchups have been so awesome. So full credit to Ole Miss. You know, they were doubted. People like me picked Georgia. Everybody was picking Georgia, thought Georgia was trending up at the end of the season. Defense had been playing well, thought there was no way that Ole Miss could slow down this Georgia rushing attack. Well, they did. And also, I think it's fair to say Pete Golding now coached Kirby Smart and company. Sure, there was that end of the half where they didn't get off the get the field goal or get out of bounds for the field goal. But man, Georgia's decisions, like the fourth down play where Stockton and the offensive line and Kirby Smart weren't on the same page. The end of game situation, you know, offensively, you could maybe critique that. I don't necessarily have a problem going for the touchdown as opposed to keeping the clock running. But I think if this for Ole Miss, Mike, is just pretty simple. In a heavyweight fight, Trinidad Chambliss answered the bell every time. Like the pass at the end to get them into field goal range, breaking tackles to get away from a rush to complete. The pass rush of Georgia was kind of neutralized by his ability to just get the ball out quick, and they were spraying the ball around the field. Kewin Lacy involved too. I also thought Xavien Harris and that Ole Miss defensive front, I thought very underrated, because there was one drive, I think it was in the second half, where Georgia was just punishing like 6-7 yards when they ran the ball every time. And then after that, Ole Miss, you know, kind of toughened up at the line of scrimmage. And Georgia's rushing attack was kind of quiet the rest of the night. So I think full credit to Ole Miss for winning in the trenches when most people thought Georgia was. Chambliss was unbelievable. Carnero was too. And credit to Pete Golding for pushing all the right buttons so far.
Now let's assume, which we probably shouldn't, but just for the state, the fact of this question, let's assume Trinidad gets his waiver and he's back. Who's got more Heisman potential, Trinidad or your beloved Arch Manning?
I was afraid you'd ask me this. Man, that's tough. I'm going to guess the odds will probably put Arch probably at the top, because I think Texas is probably going to be a top 10. Certainly, I think top 5 if they bring in the right portal guys. I don't think it's fair to Ole Miss, but I do think, and I'm not saying I'm going to count myself in this, I think some people are probably still going to give them like a minus on not having Kiffin. They're just going to say, well, Golding kept it going because it was the roster that Kiffin accumulated. They're bound to take a step back. I don't necessarily buy that, but I think that's probably going to be the thinking next year. So I think if you're maybe power ranking quarterbacks in the SEC, I think certainly think Chambliss and Arch are probably going to be up at the top.
Okay. Well, I had a feeling you'd say that, Stephen. But hey, let me ask you, in fairness, because I kind of called out Bama, so I'm not necessarily calling out Georgia, but where are we at as a program now? Georgia, 3 consecutive years in a row, Stephen, where we have not so much as won a playoff game. And the standard in Georgia now is to win the national championship. So I know they've won 2 SEC championships during that time, but, you know, I hate to admit it, but I think it's 100% true where that is just so devalued. I don't know that fans truly care much about that. I know they'd rather have a national championship. I think they'd trade a playoff win or two for an SEC championship if they could get it. So where are we at with Georgia? Again, 3 years without a playoff win. Of course, they 3 years ago, they didn't quite make it because it was the 4-team and they lost in the SEC championship. I think that team was good enough to win the whole thing. But back-to-back Sugar Bowl losses, Are you concerned at all about Georgia and where they are in this current state of college football, or is this just a one-off where they lost to a really good team?
I think the sky's falling, Mike. I mean, they've now lost, you know, back-to-back Sugar Bowls. They might start next year in the top five. Clearly, everything is going wrong. So I'm totally kidding. But I do think there is a kind of question about when you think about Georgia, and we talked about Alabama, the changes to the transfer portal and NIL, and I think you see this with Georgia, and I think you, if you think about some of the old Alabama rosters under Nick Saban, I think that those teams have been hit the hardest by being able to keep those guys, because Kirby could really stockpile some dudes on the bench. You know, you would watch the second and third stringers, like when they played, you know, like Austin Peay or somebody, and said, okay, like that guy is going to be a star, and that guy, and they all transferred and they're all playing elsewhere now. So I do think maybe the roster, the depth has been hurt. Also, I think, you know, in terms of are they doing enough in the portal, it feels like they are. You know, they had some bad luck with some injuries this year. Drew Bobo getting hurt right before the SEC championship game was a big setback. You know, I also think I didn't love the game plan by Mike Bobo. I know Kirby's very loyal to him, and I've been defending Mike Bobo. I think he's a pretty good play caller. I also think that he kind of left a lot on the table in that game. So, you know, staff-wise, are they doing enough? Are they doing enough in the portal? You know, I think there are some longer-term questions there. But I think if we start thinking ahead to next year, Georgia's going to be right there at the top of the board as one of the top teams in the country. So I'm not concerned, Mike. I do think it is going to be an important offseason to, when you start looking at what they've lost, like Zachariah Branch is already declared for the NFL. They're going to have to restock those receivers if they want to take that next step and just go from making the Sugar Bowl to winning some playoff games. I think the margin across the top of college football has kind of been neutralized. And so you see Georgia kind of fall into that top 10, which all those teams are kind of clustered together, which is kind of why I think I'm not worried if I'm a Georgia fan. Certainly some changes probably need to be made, but nothing alarming here.
Are you confident, though, that Georgia can win it all with Bobo as offensive coordinator and Gunnar Stockton at quarterback, or would you be kind of picking against them to do that?
I could talk myself into it. I think the other thing with this is, I mean, how much progression do we continue to see on defense next year for this team? Who do they bring at receiver? And then also offensive line wise, because it does feel like this Georgia and Texas both are in this category, and Ohio State is too, is like, you're not bringing in a 15 to 20 transfers. You're bringing in like 6 to 10 or so. That's really going to press for time. They're going to play significant snaps. So I think it's really going to be important for them to check off like all the major boxes. And I think on Stockton, he did rise to the moment at their biggest games. I do think that when you think about like quarterbacks, which ones are good enough to take you from just the Sugar Bowl to a national championship? Like Chambliss was awesome in the Sugar Bowl. If that Chambliss shows up, they're going to beat Miami. They're going to win the national championship because he can carry them. Is Stockton a guy that just gets you there, or can he carry you there? And I think right now he's probably like do you agree? Maybe more of like, he's just he can get you there. Don't know if he can carry you to a national title. You think that's fair?
I mean, I don't know. Cause at times he's looked really good.
Yeah.
Or like really clutch. Maybe that's a better way to say it. He's tough as hell.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know. There's kind of some lulls there too with him.
So I think if we have questions about Stockton, not necessarily about him, it's maybe like how elite he can be. Questions about how elite he can be. Then you have to make sure the rest of your team is solid around him. And that's what it kind of seems like, and kind of one of the reasons why I thought Georgia had a chance to win the national title is if your defense is peaking at the right time, if your offensive line's coming together, you're able to run the ball, you're able to play good defense, you're getting to the quarterback. Like those things that we saw as flaws early, the collective can overcome that. So I think that's, to me, for Georgia, is like, I don't know if you want Stockton carrying this team to a national championship, but I think as part of it, I think he can be that type of quarterback. I think he's very good. I just think, is he good enough to overcome like some of the flaws we saw in defense, the inability to run the ball? I don't know. I think I'd probably put him. I'd like to see the solid team. I think he needs to be part of the team and not necessarily the guy carrying them, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Hey, shout out Garrett. I like this comment. I love Gunner, but he's the epitome of high floor, low ceiling quarterback. So
good point.
I think that puts it pretty well. All right, Steven, let's move on, shall we, to, as promised, the top portal losses, top portal gains. Couple days in here to the transfer portal, and we'll probably have to update this
during the show.
Pretty significantly, yeah, maybe even during the show, but certainly by next week's time, a lot of activity should happen. But let's start with the biggest losses out of the SEC. Who do you have as the biggest loss among all SEC transfer portal players here?
Mike, at number one, let's go with Cam Coleman, the receiver from Auburn. So keep in mind, this could be some like SEC on SEC violence here that he could just transfer to another SEC school. But I think just in terms of like being an elite playmaking receiver, his departure is a big loss for Auburn. And they have reloaded by bringing in some of the guys from South Florida. But Coleman is, he could be first team All-America with talent, right quarterback, and offensive scheme around him. So I think he is a massive loss for Auburn, albeit they have offset that a little bit by some of those guys who have experience in Golish's system already.
So, well, again, I got to ask, Steven. I like to ask questions. I already know what you're going to say. But Cam Coleman, better fit for him, Texas or Texas A&M?
See, we joked about this like back in October. I was joking. I said, man, Cam Coleman catching a touchdown pass to March Manning would be pretty nice, wouldn't it? I think it's Texas. I mean, I think there is a clear need at Texas. And we saw this like in the Citrus Bowl. It's like there are times this year where guys are open and they are not catching the ball. Like Arch needs more help around him. I think if Coleman goes and plays in Austin, I think he is, number one receiver. I think certainly it you can also make that case for Texas A&M because he could kind of slide into, helping Craver next year with Concepcion off. I think, Mike, it's a bad answer for you, but I think either one, he's going to catch a lot of touchdowns and make a lot of money next year. I think if I want to go to the quarterback that I probably think has a little bit more upside next year, I think it's probably Arch in that offense.
Yeah, I think that's the correct answer just for all of that. And just, we don't know what A&M, now maybe it'll be very similar, but who knows? It's hard to say with a first-time play caller and a lot of transition there. So yeah, that's going to be pretty interesting. And it may not be Texas and Texas A&M, there could be others that, Tech could start throwing money around. Oregon. I mean, who knows? You know what?
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point on the Texas A&M offensive play caller, because I do think I definitely trust Colin Klein a little bit more knowing this track record. Wiggins being a first-time play caller, there's certainly some questions. Both these teams have some offensive line question marks next year too. So there's unknowns with both. I think if you have to trust a play caller, I think it's definitely Sark. And certainly I think if you're A&M, you'd love to get Coleman to help Marcel Reed and kind of get back. We saw in the playoff, needs more help to be more consistent in the passing game. So Cam Coleman's the only one that's going to win in this, because the bidding war that all these teams should have for him should be pretty significant. And he's going to be a day one impact guy for sure.
All right, so who's your number two portal loss, biggest portal loss out of the SEC so far?
Mike, I don't know if we did this list last year, if this guy would have made it, right? And let's go with Lance Hurd as the offensive tackle from Tennessee. I was, when he announced that he was going to the portal, I looked at his Pro Football Focus grades from last year to this year. Take these with a grain of salt, but he was about a 45 graded player in their system, and he was a 71 this year, allowed just 2 sacks. So clearly a much better year on the stat sheet. I think the eyes told you that as well. In general, Mike, I do not like losing offensive linemen, especially tackles in the SEC where you have to replace them. So I think Lance Hurd, given his improvement, given his position value, that's why he's number two on our list.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. From what I understand, they wanted to switch him to right tackle. David Sanders to left. That was a big piece of why he wanted to hit the portal. And apparently he wants millions of dollars. So I think he'll get it because that's what offensive tackles get in the transfer portal. So, I think it is a big loss. And in Tennessee now, this is what happens. You lose a guy like this, then all of a sudden one of your biggest portal needs is offensive tackle. So yeah. Why not just pay the guy that knows your system that's been successful? I don't know. But, I think that's fair. I think that's certainly fair.
Don't you get a feeling sometimes with the portal that it's like you plug one area and then one other area opens up as a loss? Because if you're Tennessee, I mean, certainly in the rev share and NIL, if you're not going to devote it to this position, you can spread it out here. Tennessee's got a lot of defensive needs, but also, I mean, you don't want to have a big question mark on one of your tackle spots, and especially in the SEC, and then go through that 9-game slate and get your quarterback injured. So I think it's a big loss for Tennessee just because, looking at the position value, looking at what he could have been in 2026, given his offensive improvement. You mentioned it too. I mean, left tackles, offensive tackles are going to be highly sought after in the portal. So I would suspect that he's going to command quite a bit of cash and we'll get it this year.
But I would also say this, Stephen, and again, he'll get what he gets because supply and demand. And I'm not saying he's not worth it, but I would be a little cautious because at the end of the day, now I've heard $3 million that's a lot of money, but I think someone will probably pay him that because he's proven SEC offensive tackle. We could probably count on one hand how many of those guys are in the portal, and we could probably count on five hands how many teams need that. You know what I mean? So yeah. So he'll get paid, but I would be slightly concerned if I were the team that landed him, because at the end of the day, it's as simple as this, right? His demand is here. The team that he just left said, you're not worth that. And then I guess I'll go somewhere. And that doesn't mean he's not worth it, but I mean, that kind of says it all to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And also, I always worry more so about defensive linemen sometimes. If they get the cash that they want, maybe the motivation isn't there. It's kind of just a large kind of issue across the board, whether it's college or NFL. So, yeah, I think his value to another team, he's probably going to get maybe more, certainly in the portal, than maybe Tennessee was willing to pay just because of the, like you said, LSU, Texas A&M, Miami could need, Oregon. I mean, you could go down the list. There's a lot of teams that need it. They're going to be willing to pay. They're going to be willing to pay more than Tennessee was willing to just because they need an offensive tackle. So, yeah, I would share that same concern.
Mm-hmm. All right. Number three, biggest loss out of the SEC to the portal, Steven.
Let's stay in the trenches. Let's go with Kerryus Kern, the offensive lineman for LSU. So not a ton of track record here, true freshman or freshman this season. But again, it's an issue of losing talented offensive linemen at a position of need for LSU, or just in general, you don't want to lose talented offensive linemen. So I know LSU's offensive line as a whole struggled. Do think there's a lot of upside here, and especially at LSU, where we've seen several guys go out of the portal. You're kind of starting from scratch there. You don't want to lose somebody who could be kind of a day one starter. So that's why Kern is number three on our list.
Mike Andrew says, they got any offensive linemen down there? I mean, I think we're down to single digits at this point in time. It's a total rebuild on the offensive line down there.
Man, it really is. And I continue to think that as much as there is a focus on the quarterback at LSU, and rightfully so, because whether it's Sam Leavitt or whether it's someone else, I really think this offensive line is probably going to be Kiffin's biggest problem spot in year one. The portal's only been open a couple days, and they haven't added massively to that. I suspect they will. but it's going to be hard, I think, to find like five high quality starters from all across the college football landscape with everybody trying to dip in there. So I'd be very interested to see who they get up front, because I think that's my bigger worry rather than quarterback, is trying to fill out those five offensive lineman spots.
Right. And I would strongly disagree with Jake Smith here. He says LSU's line didn't struggle. Nuss did. Nuss couldn't even finish the season because he got so banged up playing behind that line. And I think the perfect example, Jake, he should be familiar with this game, was the LSU-Ole Miss game, where Ole Miss quite literally rushed three for nearly the entire game, and they were just getting after him. Five could not block three. That's inexcusable, you know, on a single rep. But for all game, I don't think I've literally ever seen that in my life. But three beating five consistently.
Yeah, I mean, you can understand if they were throwing like some stuff at you with the three-man front, like for a half or so. But yeah, you've got five dudes up there. Figure out a way to block three, right? Also, 3.6 yards per carry this year for LSU. And of course, they gave up over 20 sacks. I think the offensive line is a real problem at LSU for sure.
And it wasn't like inserting Michael Van Buren, who we have seen have success in this conference at Mississippi State. So they didn't do much of anything for LSU. So again, I think it was that offensive line. Shout out to him. We appreciate you. $20. I pray Kiffin gets. Oh my Lord. His words, not by a case of the clap. Praise God. More to follow. So I'm not saying that, but that is an interesting way to display your hatred for your former coach. If I'm Ole Miss, I think I'm kind of over that. I mean, hell, we've won this battle, you know,
so far, right? I mean, yeah. You know, I think the worry would be if you're Ole Miss, if like Kiffin gets the last laugh like next year, or I mean, obviously they're going to play, and then what, like, does Pete Golding maintain the standard that they have with the roster building and all that? But I mean, Kiffin's at Baton Rouge and Pete Golding's coaching for a chance to go for the national title. They're literally 60 minutes away from a win and a national title appearance. I think Ole Miss fans got it pretty good right now.
All right, number four, Steven, biggest loss in the SEC out of the transfer portal.
Let's go with Jaden Woods, edge rusher from Florida. I think staying in the trenches here, really solid freshman season. If you look at some of the advanced metrics, the pass rush grade was very good. 12 quarterback hurries, 4 sacks. And I think, you know, kind of, again, this is losing a guy at a valued position that has a lot of upside, maybe not a ton of production now, but it could be a lot of production later. Suspect that a lot of suitors will be after him in the portal in general too. I think if you're John Sumrall, he could be one of those guys that you build around, because at Tulane, we saw that it was a very heavy focus on defensive trenches and being able to get to the quarterback. Woods could have been that guy. Maybe they find a way to work it out before he picks another school. But I think you just don't want to lose talented youngsters in the trenches, basically.
Yeah, I'm sensing a theme here with this line of scrimmage for Steven, but he knows where the SEC's bread is old buttered. So, all right, let's get to number five, biggest loss out of the portal out of the SEC, Steven.
DJ Lagway, quarterback from Florida. So I think fair to wonder, I think, is this more kind of potential rather than production by putting him here? I think the reason why he's here is I still think, this is Steven and scouting here, I still think there's a talented quarterback there. I think the question is, can you get kind of him over the injuries and get him back on track? Because last year in the first 2 years of the interceptions, it's not going to get it done. If you kind of read the tea leaves a little bit, I think there's a thought that, you know, Florida State, of course, he was at Florida State, Gus Malzahn, maybe he could be the next Cam Newton. Not sure if I'm going to buy into that, but I do think there is a talented quarterback there. And I think a year removed from injury, he will be better in 2026. And in general, I think if you're John Sumrall, Aaron Filo in this offense from Buster Faulkner, they have the familiarity from Georgia Tech. I think he'll be fine. I think the potential for Lagway was worth kind of banking on for one more season and seeing what you could get out of him. But because he's a quarterback, because he's got some talent, that's why he's number five on our list.
Yeah, and shout out Gus Malzahn. Oh, yes, as Shane calls him. I've seen that as well, where he's, I guess, apparently calling DJ Lagway, Cam Newton. He said the same with Joey Gatewood, for KJ Jefferson. Which those guys, I think, again, they're obviously no Cam Newton's. Cam's one of a kind there. But they at least share some traits with old Cam. I've been dead wrong, but I praise DJ Lagway to no end. I don't see any comparison with old DJ and Cam.
When Mike is jumping off the ship here as kind of one of the last defenders of DJ Lagway, it's making me question my ranking here of DJ Lagway at 5. I go back to something on KJ Jefferson. It is really shocking to me that he did not perform better at UCF. I really thought the Malzahn, KJ Jefferson, they'd be able to cook up some stuff, but they did not. That did not work out as well as I thought. So also in general, Mike, Florida State's desperate for offensive linemen. They're desperate for playmakers. So if he goes there, that'd be a very interesting situation.
All right, Steven, number 6, biggest loss out of the portal out of the SEC is
Austin Simmons, the quarterback for Ole Miss. We think he's in the portal, right? Mike, I think if you want to just kind of like take a step back and think about Ole Miss for next season, if Trinidad Chambliss, it sounds like he's going to get his waiver. If he didn't, then Austin Simmons is a good fallback option for Ole Miss next season. So I think either way, you know, you're losing a talented quarterback, but you're also losing your insurance policy just in case the Trinidad Chambliss situation doesn't work out. There's been, you know, I think it sounds like he's going to go to Missouri, which is a good pickup for them, but also a quarterback with multiple years potentially of eligibility, very talented, high upside, and a good insurance policy. That's kind of why he's number 6 on this list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think he's quite the wild card for Missouri. Like, he could be a giant boom. I don't think he could be a giant bust necessarily, but I think I'm trying to think of a comparison of someone who, you know, almost like there's not a ton of similarities, but almost like a Joey Aguilar, where I think he could open up your passing attack significantly, particularly throwing the ball down the field, but he may cost you a game or two with turnovers. Now, maybe that's not fair to Austin Simmons because he's a small sample size, but we've seen some carelessness with the football from him. But I certainly can appreciate where Missouri's trying to go here, because I think I'm trying to think, they probably have not had a quarterback with this much arm talent since Drew Locke, if I had to think. You know, that's been a while.
Yeah, I think it's a worthy gamble if you're Missouri to take, because you got to be better at quarterback, especially in the passing game next year. Now, they had a lot of injuries, obviously, with Prabula getting hurt, Sam Horn. The bowl game and the small sample size we saw with Zollers, I don't know if he's ready to handle the slate next year. So go out and take a big swing. And if Austin Simmons hits, I think the upside in this offense is a lot higher to tandem with the running backs. You're going to be in really good shape if it works out. So I like the gamble here for Missouri. Like you said, it's a small sample size, but I think what we saw, there's enough there, plus what we know about the potential and upside, that I think it is I think it's a gamble that you definitely take out of the portal to find your quarterback.
Right. And I think you just hit on something paramount to the whole thing, Steven. I think if you're, I'm just picking a team here. I'm not trying to be mean here, but like, let's say Kentucky, if he was going to Kentucky and they were saying, all right, let's build the offense around Austin Simmons, he might have enough talent to actually get that done. But at Missouri, we know they are run first, and they've got two really good running backs, and they've got some good offensive linemen. So they just need a competent quarterback that can open up some things in the offense that they haven't had. And I think Austin Simmons, I think he fits that bill pretty well.
It's almost like he can be a complimentary piece and not have to assume to be the guy from day one. That's like, we're counting on you to carry this team, because that's you mentioned Kentucky. Looking at the quarterbacks, like Sam Levitt's been mentioned for Kentucky, that quarterback from day one is going to have to raise the whole team, whereas Austin Simmons can be kind of plug into complementary piece with the run game. Also, think, you know, Drinkwitz and the staff have done a good job of finding the right fits through the portal, defense and offensive line. So you could kind of see where this is going, is that, you know, quarterback play, if they got the pieces around Austin Simmons to kind of bring him along, whereas if you throw him somewhere else, he's got to be ready to go from day one. So I like the fit, and I like the situation, the complementary pieces that he can be early on.
Mm-hmm. All right, Steven, number seven, biggest loss out of the transfer portal in the SEC is?
We're going to go to the secondary and go to Jake Crawford. Some SEC on SEC violence here. Mike Auburn to Ole Miss. So, you know, kind of, again, a position that I put a premium on is corners, you know, especially in this era of college football with the quarterbacks and the passing game and the rules. I think you want to have good corners. And Crawford last year, the last 2 years, if you look at his coverage grades, they've been really solid. Also, this season, targeted 33 times, gave up 20 catches for about 200 yards. That's pretty good. And also, he'll only be a junior this year. So kind of a guy that maybe you could bank on being kind of a, you know, if you're Ole Miss, you bring him in, he develops for a year, he could be gone to the NFL. But a guy you can plug and play and put him in there as your one or two corner or your slot, wherever you like him. I think it's a really good gift for Ole Miss. It's a big loss on the back end for Auburn.
Yeah, when Portal Pete adds you to the roster, Steven, you know you're a good player. You know what?
I like the Portal Pete. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I like Ole Miss's Portal class so far. I think they've done a really, really solid job on the defensive side of the ball.
All right, who's number eight biggest loss, Steven?
Let's go to Kentucky, and let's go back to the quarterbacks. Cutter Bowley. So, Mike, I think that this could be an interesting, when the dust settles, is to look at who Kentucky gets at quarterback. Because I think if you're banking on getting somebody else and you're nudging Cutter Bowley out the door or not necessarily guaranteeing him the starting job, however it worked out, you have to think you're getting somebody better, because you know the guy you have is probably pretty solid. And we saw this year, Cutter Bowley, under some pretty difficult circumstances, played some good ball at times for Kentucky. And you add in Will Stein, a guy with a good track record of offenses and developing quarterbacks. So I'm a little surprised that Kentucky went this route. It makes me think they have to be big game hunting at quarterback, and they have a pretty good idea they're going to be able to get one. If they don't, it's going to look pretty bad in a few weeks when we're talking about final portal classes, and Kentucky has a question mark at quarterback. So this one could go up or down depending on where Kentucky lands at quarterback.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, Steve. This could jump all the way up to number one if they don't add someone. But Kentucky's being so aggressive, it's in the portal, it's next to impossible to see them not adding a quarterback. So I'm sure they're going to get someone. We'll just have to wait and see who that is.
I like the aggressiveness too. I mean, why not? You've got to upgrade this roster. You've got a lot of holes to fill. Swing high, new approach. You know, Mark Stoops is gone. It's a new era with Will Stein. So I like putting your stamp on the roster right away. It's just that quarterback one is a big one for Will Stein and the staff to figure out.
All right, so who's number nine biggest loss, Steven?
Marvin Burks, the safety from Missouri. Mike, I know you really liked Marvin Burks on this list, so we got to make sure we get him in our top 10. And I think about two things. I think number one, really solid, productive player, but also number two, given the losses and question marks that Missouri's had at corner, you know, losing one of your safeties definitely does not help. So I think it's a loss on the back end, and you tandem that with a corner position. I know Missouri picked up a corner from Oregon this week, but still, that kind of raises some questions on the back end of this defense for Missouri.
Yeah, and I believe he's the, to my knowledge, I could be wrong about this, Steven, but, you know, we're losing quite a bit on defense, a lot of just out of eligibility or off to the NFL, what have you. But I believe he's the only returning starter that was projected to return that has hit the portal. So again, it would have been nice to have him back, I think, for some continuity, for some veteran leadership. And I know some fans are, you know, it's funny, they find like one or two things a guy can't do, and they're like, well, he just can't play, you know? He started for 2 years, two of the best years we've had, but he can't play a lick, Steven, because he can get beat over the top. I get it, but he's one of the hardest hitters in the conference too. He's a force back there, and I'll tell you what, Steven, if he goes to Tennessee, I'll be pretty damn happy to have him on the roster, you know what I mean?
I think Tennessee could probably use somebody of his caliber in the back end. Mike, I was just looking to, like I said, take these with a grain of salt, but Marvin Burks's coverage grade jumped up quite a bit this year. According to Pro Football Focus, it was about 49 last year. It was almost 74 this year, graded out as about a 75 overall player. So, you know, I think there's a kind of a question too, is, you almost like, are you going to be able to replace him with same caliber of player in one off season, or is it even a player with flaws could still be a very good at retaining that player given some of your other needs? So I think just knowing that and knowing the turnover in the secondary, I'd like to have a guy like this to kind of have some continuity on the back end for Missouri, and also noting his improvement from 24 to 25.
Mm-hmm. All right, final portal loss, number 10, Steven, where are you at here?
Mike, this is a fascinating position in general for this particular team, but we went with Trey Wisner, the running back from Texas, also CJ Baxter, also transferring out to Trey Wisner, of course, you know, was leading rusher the last 2 years, only about 600 yards this year, offensive line issues for Texas. It's a question mark, number one, Mike, because if you look at who Texas has lost with Wisner and Baxter, and the depth is an issue there. Of course, Christian Clark has looked good at times too. But losing a guy who's been a productive player, and also a guy that you have to think the offensive line, it is a focal point in the portal. It's going to have to be better next year. But Isaac Brown from Louisville decided to withdraw from the portal. That's a big name running back off the board. So where does Texas go if they don't get one of those big name running backs? Do they feel good about what they have coming back? Do they feel good about maybe not a high end addition? This need could go up or down, because Texas has to run the ball better next year, and you're losing a guy who has been a productive player in your system for 2 years now.
Not our issue, Steven. They got Arch Manning. Arch Manning will just lead the team in rushing next year. I'm surprised you didn't think of that.
Well, Mike, I was sitting here, you know, I was thinking, you know, Arch could cover for a lot. But we did see this year that without an offensive line and out and a consistent running game, Arch looked pretty human at times, like any quarterback would. So it'd be wise for Sarkisian to find somebody who can perhaps be a 1,000-yard rusher in this. And that's kind of the shocking thing, is that, you know, I think Sarkisian and Kyle Flood do a pretty good job of developing running games. So to be that inept in this area was pretty shocking. So I suspect Texas will end up in a pretty good spot from the portal at running back, but still pretty notable to lose a guy who's rushed for over, you know, 1,500 yards the last 2 years.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just thankful, Steven, that we've not lost the legend, J.R.
Glad he didn't transfer to the Big Ten,
J.R.
right?
J.R. has done it again.
Thank you, J.R. He gifted a membership, Steven, to... This is a tough one. Shino Bus Worlds. Hopefully I didn't butcher that too bad. And we also got Steven Up, our other legend. Shout out, Steven Up.
Always showing up for them boys in Tuscaloosa. It's Steven Up. Roll Tide.
I could get this one a lot easier. He gifted Chevy Mert. So Chevy Mert and Shino Bus Worlds, welcome to...
the family.
Yeah, thank you for the assist, Steven.
Felt good for the first one for 2026. So
all right, so portal losses, but hey, glass is half full over here, Steven. It ain't half empty. So let's go biggest portal commitments to date in the SEC. Who's number one on your list?
Mike, let's start with a quarterback. Largely because he's a quarterback, so he has to take top spot on the list. And that is Aaron Filo, transferring in from Georgia Tech to Florida. Big thing to note here, he played at Georgia Tech, worked under Buster Faulkner the last 2 years. Also, in limited time, Haynes King was banged up In 2024, Philo played a lot. Haynes King was banged up a little bit earlier this year. He played, I think it's an FCS opponent early in the season. I really liked what I saw out of him. Small sample size, of course. The question is going to be, it's in the SEC. It's going to be a little bit more difficult than the ACC. So curious to see how that transition goes, but he's in the same scheme. And right now, he might be the starting quarterback at Florida. So that's why Aaron Philo is number one so far on this list.
And it's my understanding, Stephen, please correct me if I'm wrong, that he is a significantly different quarterback than Haynes King in terms of just his skill set. Like we're not getting Haynes King 2.0 here.
Yeah, I would say he's probably better, like more of a pure passer to some extent. You know, Haynes King, I think, and should say Aaron Philo, I think, ran for like 75 yards as a freshman in 2024. Limited sample size. I would say he's probably not as strong as a runner, but maybe a little bit more upside long term in the passing game. So yeah, little different skill set, but I think the biggest thing is that familiarity will help him make that fast transition in Gainesville.
Yeah, and it's one of those which I think this is going to become more and more popular, Stephen, if these coaches know what they're doing, where you add an offensive coordinator and a quarterback that have worked previously to expedite the whole thing, like a Diego Pavia at Vanderbilt with the New Mexico State influence at Oklahoma, of course, John Mateer and Ben Arbuckle. And we've seen Indiana. Didn't they do something similar? Well, maybe not the quarterback, but obviously – about the half James, the roster.
James Madison, right, yeah.
So, I mean, again, this is a smart move by a smart coach, I feel like.
Yeah, I like what John Summerall has done so far at Florida. I think he's hired a really good staff. The coordinators are outstanding. I like Buster Faulkner's creativity. I think he's also got that versatility to kind of lean, okay, if this is working, we can go here. We can build the offense around here. Portal-wise, you know, they've been adding some guys so far, maybe not any kind of like Philo's obviously the biggest name because he's a quarterback, but in general, I think having somebody like Faulkner and having a quarterback with experience in his offense allows you to hit the ground running right away. Like you said, the Arbuckle, Mateer, some of these other ones, there's definitely a honeymoon period for these new coaches, but you better win right away because optimism and hope and all that goodwill could fade away. So having somebody like that can really just supercharge the improvement you need. So I think getting somebody, an OC quarterback combo, I think that's kind of the way to go if you can do it.
Yeah. All right. Number two, biggest portal commitment to date in the SEC, Stephen.
Mike, we're going to camp out in Oxford for the next couple of these. We're going to start with Jake Crawford, transferring over from Auburn to Ole Miss. And again, you know, Mike, I like what Pete Golding's done so far. You know, this defense is going to need some help next year. Crawford is potentially a very solid corner, a guy who probably will make some preseason all SEC teams somewhere. So getting a guy who started or played a lot of snaps for 2 years in the SEC at a pretty solid level is a good get for Pete Golding at a premium position too, at a position where there's not going to be a lot of high level guys in the portal. So Jay Crawford going to Ole Miss is two.
Hey, we just had a little bit of a breaking news, not horribly relevant to us here, Stephen, but anybody looking for a quarterback, if they had their eyes on Bryce Underwood, he just announced he is staying at Michigan, which is good. I don't think he can play in this conference. Of course, would it have been funny? Imagine his recruitment a year ago, whenever it was, Stephen, where he was like, hey, your options will be Lane Kiffin or Kyle Whittingham. And he'd say, what the hell are you talking about? I'm going to go play for Sharon Moore or Brian Kelly. He just said, the hell you are. just wait a year and see where we're at. But that sums up college football right now, doesn't it?
Man, it does. Things change fast, don't they? Also, we should note, Mike, there was another commitment. Hollywood Smothers, the running back from NC State, officially committed to Alabama, it looks like.
Oh, nice. Well, they need all the help they can get at running back.
He would probably actually make our list at like number one right now. So,
Okay. I know Tennessee was interested in him as well. So very talented guy. I have to do some research on him. But all right, number three on your list, Stephen, biggest portal commitments so far.
Portal Pete's at it again because Keaton Thomas, the linebacker from Baylor, transferring in from Baylor to Oxford. And I think this is kind of your prototypical like box linebacker, Mike, who's going to help Ole Miss against the run. He's led the team in tackles the last 2 years. And I also, this is kind of one of those things. Dave Aranda is pretty good on defense. Their defense at Baylor hasn't been very good, but I really trust kind of his evaluations, and he's thought highly enough to kind of feature Keaton Thomas as one of the top defenders the last 2 years. So production is there. He's played at a high level at Baylor. I think he's going to be a really solid fit there for Ole Miss and part of this portal haul for Portal Pete.
Right. And, you know, I would assume probably Ole Miss fans know this, but I don't know if the rest of the SEC fans – Aranda and Portal Pete, they came up with this in the same system. So this is not going to be, you know, where you're bringing in a linebacker and he's got to learn terminology and scheme, all that. These guys learned under Ron Roberts. So that's not only is that a excellent player, but perhaps a plug and play type player that is already going to be familiar with everything they're running on the defensive side in Oxford.
Doesn't that sort of lessen the concerns that we've talked about, which is sometimes it takes half a season or a season, or even the idea that maybe we shouldn't overrate some of these transfer guys? Like, they can help, but like, what's the sliding scale of like the impact for next season? Does that make sense?
No, 100%. And I think that's a big key to all of this. You know what?
Yeah, I think targeting guys who may have played like in a similar system, if you're not bringing in their coordinator, if they know sort of the terminology, can really just help ease that transition. Because like you said, and we've talked about it too, I do think probably do need to be a little bit more cautious about the impact of some of these guys. Like, there's a high level that, you know, 20 to 25 can make. And then some of these guys that it looks like they're going to make an impact, it may not happen till halfway through the season. So anything to kind of speed that up is a positive there for Ole Miss. And again, Mike, I really like what they've done in the portal so far with Thomas and Crawford.
Mm-hmm. And last thing I'll say on all this, Stephen, I think taking it that step further, again, no disrespect to On3, 24/7, and probably even Athlon Sports. When they put out these lists, you know, top portal classes or top portal fits, it's, you know, like Ole Miss probably had this Keaton Thomas. They probably had him sky high because he fits like a glove what they're trying to do. Whereas I know Tennessee was interested in him. But maybe he was linebacker too at Tennessee. You know what I mean? So it just there's so many moving pieces that it's not just, well, how high is this guy rated? You know, or what does this outlet say about him? It's the Ole Miss board is different than Arkansas board. It's different than Kentucky board. And you just got to have faith that your coaches know what they're doing and getting the right pieces to fit what you're asking them to do, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I would also caution on some of the team rankings. They're a lot of times graded on quantity, not necessarily like the quality of them, which is why, you know, having a human actually look at the classes is probably better when we talk about it. So, yes, I agree with all that. And also that's why kind of take, you know, you have to kind of look at the system where they fit. Sometimes you're just grading a player just based upon like the overall talent, what they've done so far. You kind of have to, like you said, trust the coaching staff that they're looking for something specific and they can kind of fit that need. So a lot to take in with the portal and maybe, like we said, take everything with a grain of salt when it comes to some of these portal rankings.
Right. All right. Number four, Stephen, biggest commitment via the portal.
This one's big. Literally, Ian Jeffrard, Jefford, the defensive lineman from Arkansas, Mike, 380 plus pounds going to Texas. And I get it. The impact on the stat sheet, it's not very significant, but Texas needs some beef on that defensive line. They're going to be losing some guys, got to get, you know, Muschamp scheme, got to get tougher against the run, whatever you want to put it. He's going to be able to help right away. Size fits as a nose tackle, defensive tackle, wherever you want to put it. So the impact on the stat sheet will probably not be very high, but the impact to the individual defense is probably going to be very high as a rotational piece for Texas.
As soon as you said he's bringing the beef, Cousin Shane nods in approval wherever he is. Shout out Shane. All right, number five, Steven. Biggest portal addition out of the SEC.
Mike, let's go to Norman, Oklahoma, and let's talk about Hayden Hansen, the tight end. A tight end I know Oklahoma fans are probably really excited about, right, after kind of struggling with that position the last couple of years. I like Hayden Hansen because he gives you two things. Like, he's a pass catcher, but also can also be a good blocker. Rocky Beers, the Colorado State transfer, that's got to be Cousin Shane's favorite player there. But I think Hayden Hansen is probably the better of the two players, a guy who could probably push for all SEC honors. But Oklahoma needed a tight end who can actually do both of those things and isn't just a receiver. So filling a very, very important need for the Oklahoma Sooners.
Yeah, and there's a lot of negatives you could say about old Billy Napier, but he knew how to, you know, utilize a versatile tight end that halves had to block and catch, you know, just at all what you traditionally think of as a tight end, and that's what we're getting out of Hansen, who played down there for old Napier. So I like it. I mean, Oklahoma's been non-existent at tight end here lately. So I think that potentially is a huge pickup for them.
Could help Mike with almost everything we've talked about with Oklahoma's offense. You need a pass catcher to help Mateer. You need some blocking to help your run game. And just having him as kind of that chess piece can help both those things. Like, you got a better blocker up front, frees up the offensive line, makes it a little bit easier in the run game or the pass game. So it seems the impact on the stat sheet, you know, may not be like 50 catches this year, but I think his all around versatility is really going to be a very valuable, like, X factor for Mateer this next season.
Mm-hmm. All right. Number six on your list, Steven, biggest portal additions out of the SEC.
Let's go back to the trenches. Let's go to Colton Price, going from Baylor to Kentucky. Like this pickup for Kentucky. Price has been a very solid player for Baylor the last couple of years. He's had over 800 snaps the last two seasons and also allowed just two sacks in that time frame. So, you know, if you want to kind of look at his positional breakdown, he's been, you know, I think you could maybe use him somewhere on the interior. He's played mostly at center this season for Baylor. So for an offensive line that's in transition, for a team that needs proven offensive linemen, Price definitely fits that up at Kentucky.
I feel bad for Baylor losing all these guys, but sucks to be in the Big 12, I guess.
I think there's a pretty compelling case they might be the worst team in the Big 12 right now for next season.
All right, number seven on your list, Steven, biggest portal additions.
Mike, all those late nights staying up for the Hawaii games are about to pay off. Let's go to LSU and talk about Jackson Harris. He is a former Stanford transfer who went to Hawaii last season. And let me tell you, he likes big plays. And that was the one thing that consistently stood out this year while watching Hawaii on those late nights, is that he could be a field stretcher. And so, you know, he's got power conference talent by starting his career at Stanford. He's already produced at a lower level, almost 20 yards a catch at Hawaii this season, 12 touchdowns. I think he's going to be a nice fit for Lane Kiffin's offense. So Jackson Harris at number seven at LSU.
Well, I mean, they always did a heck of a job identifying these receivers in Oxford. So I can only imagine that tradition will continue in Baton Rouge. Heck, I never heard of old Trey Harris before he got to Oxford, and he was $1 million immediately. So yeah, that's going to be a name to know this offseason, I would think, in the SEC for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I think a key piece of, if you think about, you know, being able to kind of just be good, he's not necessarily good at one thing, but he's very good at like stretching the field. And so that can open up like the middle of the field for, like, you know, whether it's Tre'Davious Green, another tight end, or another receiver. So I like the pickup from the production and what he brings to the table. But like, also, you do trust kind of Lane Kiffin, his evaluations, right, on some of these running backs and receivers, because the track record is pretty solid.
God Loves Comics says, imagine leaving paradise for the Bayou. Well, they got better football in the Bayou, so I think that's fair.
Does the paycheck maybe help with that too?
Yeah, you always go back. All right, number eight, Steven, biggest portal addition.
Let's go to Athens. Mike, we talked about Georgia. How do they go from like Sugar Bowl to national championship? Khalil Barnes, the Clemson transfer. Dabo in shambles about the portal probably as Khalil Barnes goes from Clemson to Georgia. Back in 2023, he looked like one of the rising stars kind of at defensive back. I don't know that he's necessarily matched that play over the last couple seasons. You know, kind of mixed bag when you look at some of the advanced metrics as far as like coverage and ability to stop the run. But I think there's a good player there. And this is kind of one of those ones that I trust Kirby Smart, that a guy that kind of can get the most out of his talent. You know, Clemson's had a couple defensive coordinators that didn't do a good job of maximizing talent after Brent Venables left. So I think you can look at it and say, maybe he hasn't played up to that potential, but let's give Kirby Smart and the staff a chance to work with him. So I think given Georgia's losses there, the talent, the upside, I like the pickup here for Georgia as a gamble. Khalil Barnes would be the next guy on our list.
Do you think Dabo is he trying to get fired by hiring Chad Morse?
Man, I don't understand what Dabo is doing. It's, you know, I think there's kind of a like back to basics almost. Like he wants to, like, this worked and I don't, you know, I went outside to go hire Garrett Riley and it didn't work out. So if I go back to what I know, man, that was like working like in 2016, you know, 2016, 2017, right? I mean, at some point you got to kind of evolve. So yeah, between the portal, between the staff, it's not going well.
Was Chad Morse, I mean, was he even in coaching the last year or two?
At one point, he was like a high school head coach, I believe.
Right. That was the last I heard. Oh, excuse me.
And he was also at Texas State in 2024, I believe.
Mm.
So...
okay, well, we're just helping our old buddies, I guess. But
there's a trust factor, I guess, right?
I think I'm allergic to BS. All right, shout out number 9, Stephen, biggest portal addition in the SEC.
Let's go to Cohen Echols, Mike. He is a transfer from LSU, offensive lineman, to Texas A&M. Very valuable pickup considering what Texas A&M is losing along the line of scrimmage this offseason. You know, 3 or 4 starters, depending on where you look, need to rebuild that front. So he's got SEC experience, got some talent too. I think a guy with some good coaching maybe could be a starter for the Aggies next year. But I just like accumulating talent in the trenches when you lose a lot, and that's why he's number 9 on our list.
Yeah, A&M's losing a lot on the offensive line, and another one, LSU, which I understand LSU clean break, but you gotta have some bodies there. I would think
you gotta fill out a 2 deep, right?
All right. So final one, Steven, number 10, biggest portal ad out of the transfer portal thus far in the SEC.
Mike, I realized I should have said this when we talked about Aaron Filo, but Austin Simmons probably would be number 1 if it was like official. He was going to Missouri, but since it's not, he didn't make our top 10 for now. At number 10, Mike, I went with Keyshawn Singleton. He's a receiver from South Florida. Basically, the entire South Florida receiving corps seems to be making the move from South Florida to Auburn. Can't really blame him because there's a lot of opportunity there given what Auburn is losing. And Singleton was awesome last season. 17 yards a catch, 8 touchdowns, was one of Byron Brown's go-to guys. Also, Jeremiah Coger, the other USF transfer coming in from Auburn. So this is a talent, and this is also checking off a very, very big need. So I like Singleton in this offense. Stretch the field, was the go-to guy, like I said, for Brown. That'll be a seamless transition whenever Byron Brown makes it official to Auburn.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Any surprise he hasn't done that yet? Because they're seemingly adding every offensive weapon they can from South Florida. They bring in the whole offense, receivers and tight ends and running backs, I believe. So where's the one? I mean, heck, they've even added, I think he was just a signee, but they've already added one South Florida quarterback. But Where's the big one, you think?
Yeah, was it Lachlan Hewitt signed with Auburn over the weekend? I am a little surprised that it hasn't happened already. Honestly, when the portal opened, I thought that would probably be one of the first quarterback dominoes to fall just because it was the easiest to make the connection there. So I'm a little surprised that it hasn't happened. I'm not necessarily worried if I'm an Auburn fan yet. Could be a lot of factors in there. Also, if you do want to worry, if you're an Auburn fan, perhaps some of these teams that are missing on quarterbacks or maybe inquiring about the availability of some. So the price could be an issue, other teams looking around, but it still just makes a lot of sense for Brown to go to Auburn and play with Alex Golish next year.
Hey, until it's done.
That's right.
It's not done. You know what? So, yeah, I'd be a little panicked. I'm not going to lie. Because that would have been the first one I got done.
Yeah, I think before I would have signed any skill players, I would have made sure that I had Byron Brown locked down at Auburn. If by next week it's not done, I'll probably get a little bit worried.
Okay. All right. Well, are you worried, Steven, about Ole Miss in the Fiesta Bowl against Miami?
Mike, here we go again, right? Everybody's picking Miami. Ole Miss doesn't have a chance to block that Miami front. They're at Reuben Bain, Akeem Mizador. They're going to just get after Trinidad Chambliss. That Miami offensive line is just going to maul that Ole Miss defensive front. Right? Here we go again. That's the setup for this game. That's the setup that Ole Miss is going to hear for the next couple days. So I actually think that the same things that kind of applied to the Sugar Bowl actually can work out here for Ole Miss. Because I think if you can play this game out in space and you're pressing and getting Miami out of that game where it's played like in the trenches, I think you got a chance to win this game. I'm a little bit more optimistic about Ole Miss chances probably than most people after the win over Georgia. So, yes, it is a hard matchup, but I also think that Ole Miss can do some things in this game that give Miami a lot of trouble.
Is there any advantage at all to the fact that Miami will have an extra day to prepare, given that I think it's just 7 days between Ole Miss played and this next one. So, if it was like 19 days and 20, I don't think there's any. But if we're talking 8 and 7, is there any advantage there one way or another or not really?
I would always prefer more rest. Although we have seen that having the byes in the playoff didn't really work out. So maybe you're staying in rhythm. The only other thing would be, Mike, I don't know. It hasn't hurt Ole Miss at all yet. But with the coaching transition between this team and LSU, if you're down a lot of guys, does it slow your prep? Are you shorthanded anywhere? Like having that extra day could help with that. Miami's not really going through the same thing, plus the extra bye, like those are the extra time off. Like those things probably help Miami. I'm a little bit worried about all the coaching stuff for Ole Miss, missing some guys. If they are missing a bunch and they don't have those assistants, one less day, I think that's a big check kind of in Miami's favor.
Mm-hmm. Which quarterback do you think is more likely to disappoint in this game? And not to say that either one's a bad player or anything, but you would have to tell me, because I literally don't know, Steven. The games Miami lost, I believe they turned the ball over quite a bit, and I would imagine Carson Beck, actually, yeah, I do remember now. Was it maybe Louisville where maybe that was the one, but he had a critical interception or two that I saw. But so what's more likely, that he has a game like that, or that this Miami defensive front maybe gets after Trinidad and he doesn't have a good game because of it? Which is more likely in this scenario, you think?
Mike, you're right about the interceptions. I think 6 of Carson Beck's 10 interceptions came in losses this year. That was to Louisville, the 4, and then it was also, I think, 2 against SMU. I mean, I think if a quarterback's going to disappoint, it's probably Miami. Like, I think Carson Beck in Miami, I mean, if you look at his numbers in the first two games, he's been under 140 passing yards in the playoff. They haven't needed him. He's done all the right things. So that's not a knock on him. Like, the statistics are what they are, but he's pushed all the right buttons in the playoff. I think, when I thought about the pass rush for Miami against Ole Miss. I wonder if having a quarterback in a scheme that just is so quick at getting the ball out, and Chambliss is so good at finding like passing lanes too. As you saw this, like with Gunnar Stockton, there were some times where like Harris and some of those defensive linemen were like flashing right in front of the passing lane and they got the pass deflection. I suspect that Miami's going to try to do some similar things with their size and length up front, but also think with Chambliss, a quick, you know, the ability to get the ball quick and the playmakers, that they can kind of neutralize that. Also, I like the idea of using a lot of tempo in this game. And I know Ole Miss already does, but Miami's front, I want those guys like, I want those guys huffing and puffing. Like you get them in, you know, the fourth quarter and they've been out there for 60, 70 plays or whatever you get it to. Like, I want to wear those guys down. So I think if I'm Ole Miss, there may have to be like some small punches. And if you could just kind of hold your own, but that pace in the fourth quarter and stuff could really start to take a toll if you can wear down Miami. So that would be the way that I would kind of counteract it, is like pace, quick throws, getting the ball in space, make these guys tackle, and let Ole Miss's playmakers kind of be the difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is interesting you say that, Steve, because I remember in that Ohio State game, they made reference to that. Just the fact they don't really sub a lot at Miami's.
Yeah.
Just because, those guys are so good. So let me ask you this. I just looked at it. The over-under is 51.5. Does a high-scoring game, does it favor either one of these teams?
If I'm Ole Miss, I win it high.
Yeah.
I think Ole Miss can win if it's just 51. I think the higher it goes, the better. And that was kind of when watching the Sugar Bowl, I will admit when Dalen Everett took that fumble back, I think there was some doubt that started to creep into my mind as to like, is this game going to get away from Ole Miss? You know, but the fact that they punched back kind of told me like, this is just a different team. It's a different program this year. But also the higher that scoring went in the second half, it's almost like you could see the confidence meter start to build that Ole Miss can win this game. I think if this game is played at Miami's pace, they're probably going to win. I think if it's a higher pace, like 34-31 kind of game, I'll take my chances with the Ole Miss and Trinidad Chambliss and Kewon Lacy being able to make some plays in a high-scoring game over mm-hmm. Miami.
How are Miami's special teams? Because I know they could return kicks. We saw that against A&M. But do they have the kicking game settled? Because we know Ole Miss is outstanding at special teams. Where's Miami there?
Yeah, Carter Davis, their kicker, had a pretty disastrous showing in College Station, but he's been pretty good for the most part. I think he's like 16 of 21. He beat out old SEC friend Bert Auburn this year for the starting job.
Oh, don't mention him to the Texas fans, Steven.
Sorry to bring up any bad memories there, but yes, Davis for the most part has been pretty solid. Punter also pretty solid too. I think he's averaging about 44 yards per kick, Dylan Joyce. So yeah, they're solid on special teams.
Okay. Yeah. So no major advantage there, but, it's pretty cool, isn't it? I mean, I know Ole Miss is going to be a very popular team for all the reasons that are obvious, but I think it's pretty neat too. Oregon never won a championship in football. Indiana, obviously the same. And even Miami, it's for me, it's hard to hate even Miami, given that Cristobal, he's from there, I believe, and he's, you know, mm-hmm. he left Oregon, and he's trying to return them to glory. I mean, it's kind of good stories all around, I would think. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I do. I think a lot of kind of casual fans are probably excited about the idea of someone new winning a national championship, because you got Indiana, you've got kind of new-ish old, like Oregon back in there. And certainly Ole Miss. I think the drama around Lane Kiffin, I think Ole Miss might be kind of like America's team. And then, of course, you got Miami, which is kind of like, you know, old, new, like they're back, but not really back because it's been a while since they were in there. Also, all four of those coaches, you know, have not won a national title. Cristobal, Cignetti, you know, Golding. So, I mean, they're... somebody's going to win a championship that's going to be new, and the coach is landing whoever it is. They're going to be the first time a national champion head coach. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And of course, they're all famously Nick Saban former assistants. Right. So let me ask you this, Stephen. And again, yeah, I'm asking you to go into the mind of Nick Saban, which is a dangerous place based on what I've heard. But if Nick Saban were to reveal, and I'm sure he won't, but if he were to reveal which one of his former assistants he's rooting for the hardest, who do you think that would be?
That's a good question. Maybe Cignetti?
I would probably agree with that.
It's kind of tough because Golding and, of course, you know, Kiffin. He's probably maybe rooting for the SEC, so maybe he is rooting for Ole Miss. Lanning and Cristobal are both a little bit on the younger side, so you probably could think, okay, they could get back there. Cignetti's, he's in his 60s. You could say maybe he needs the window might not be there as over the next, 15 years or so. It might be the next 10.
He was apparently, though, pushing Kiffin to go to LSU. So it's almost like if Ole Miss wins it without him, I wonder if that comes back to Saban at all, where Kiffin's like, what the hell's wrong with you? I trusted you.
Right. Yeah. You wanted this coach to be pushed to LSU or pushing into the job. And then the team that he was at takes the roster that he built and won a national championship. That probably wouldn't look very good for Kiffin, but kudos to Kiffin for building that roster and getting them in this place. I think it's probably Cignetti, Mike. I think he's rooting for it.
And I think most people, and it's probably fair, Stephen, but in this Fiesta Bowl matchup, I think most people will focus on Ole Miss offense versus Miami defense. But who's got the edge, in your opinion, in the other key matchup, Miami offense versus Ole Miss defense?
I probably would lean the Miami offense. And I think to kind of go back to what we saw in the Sugar Bowl, I was really impressed by the job that Ole Miss did at shutting down the run game of Georgia. That was the biggest key that I thought coming into the game. I thought it's probably going to be tough just based upon what we saw on paper. Statistically, that Ole Miss was going to be able to hold the Georgia run game in check. They did. I think Miami's offensive line is better. In terms of a backfield, they got a lot of guys who can just move the pile. Mark Fletcher, and you can go down the list. They're all really solid players. They've got a deep backfield and a good offensive line. So I think the same kind of thing almost like worries me here for Ole Miss is like, if you can meet that challenge, then I think they can contain Miami. But what I also worry about is like the same thing. It's like the body blows. Like second quarter, it's a 3-yard run. But what happens in the fourth quarter, if you've been on the field, does that 3-yard run become 30? So they're up against a better offensive line this week than they were last week against Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Any other specific position battles or anything that you really could be focused in on heading into this Fiesta Bowl?
Mike, I think one thing I would like to see if I'm Ole Miss is I think you have to find a way to take away Malachi Toney, the playmaker for Miami, whether that's on special teams, whether that's receiving. I would make those other guys beat you. They have some solid like second and third receivers, but you look at guys like Keelan Marion, CJ Daniels, they've transferred around a bit. I'll take my chances, but I want to keep Toney in check. So I think if you're Ole Miss, it's also one of those things too where you may have to bend a little bit, but don't break. Be willing to trade 3, don't give up 7, because if you can score 7 and you're just giving up 3, that's going to be a winning formula. So I think like red zones, like third down, who's getting off the field. I think tempo and pace, I think, are two of the things that I'm going to be watching for, because if Miami's dictating pace and this game is played like right in that booth, it's going to be hard for Ole Miss to win this one.
Mm-hmm. And then again, if you've not made a decision yet, that's perfectly fine. But have you made a determination on who you'll be picking in the game?
I'm leaning Miami. Don't feel strong about it.
Get the hell in.
Very slight. I'd probably put it like 2 points, 3 points, somewhere in the spread. You know, I kind of go back to trenches here. I think at some point they will make a stop that probably determines the game. I don't feel strong about it though, Mike, because I think that Ole Miss can counter that with Chambliss and this offense. I think for all the strengths of the defensive front, if you can get the tempo going, the pace, I think also Ole Miss has got a lot of momentum right now too. Certainly Miami does after picking off A&M and Ohio State, but both of these semifinal matchups look completely like toss-ups to me. Lean slightly with Miami and Indiana at this point.
Me and Indiana the other. Okay. Well, I think that's more than fair. I'm just giving you a hard time. I mean, these are potentially two fantastic football games. I mean, they're both, I'm looking at it right now. Indiana's favored by 3.5. Miami's favored by 3.5. So, you know, again, take that for what it's worth, but neither one of these is anticipated to be a double-digit game. So, if nothing else, I think we're in for a heck of a semifinals round this week in college football.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, last year's what was Notre Dame and Penn State, which came down to the wire, and then Ohio State, of course, Jack Sawyer's heroics against Texas. So I hope we're in for two great semifinal games. Because, I mean, we saw like some of the first round blowouts. We had to navigate that. We get better games as it goes along. So the fact that we've got two potential toss-ups in the semifinals, and then, any of these four teams can win it. And I think that's pretty exciting. So I think it's going to be an interesting week of games here. And then, of course, we'll get to the big one and see which first-time head coach is able to hoist that trophy.
All right, Stephen, can't thank you enough for dropping by and sharing all this knowledge with us. Before you go, as always, can you remind the cousins where to follow you and where to find your work?
Absolutely, Mike. All my portal coverage is coming up at AthlonSports.com. You can follow me over on the Twitters at AthlonSteven, Stephen LCFB, over on Facebook and Instagram.
All right, Stephen, we appreciate you so much. And I should have said this a little bit earlier so people... But anyway, Shane has to go a little early tomorrow, so we're going to be jumping on at 30 minutes earlier than normal. So 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central, tomorrow only. Shane's got stuff to do, so we all cater to Shane, and we cater to JP for today's shout-outs. Michael Dunlap, Tolkien, Cousin JR, Steven Up, and Ted B. Thank you, and thank you all. We'll see you tomorrow, 30 minutes early. And you, Cousin J.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.